On This Week in Enterprise Tech, we have Mr. Curtis Franklin and Ms. Brian Chee here today. Now, it isn't Space Force, but it's a new task force being put together dedicated to rooting out and responding to the growing threats of ransomware. We'll talk about it. Plus, building upon hardware rooter trust is a difficult thing, but with some new tech and new hardware out there, we'll definitely try. Plus, fintech is a growing area in an industry, and today we have Lil Roberts. She's CEO and founder of Zendu, and we're going to go and geek out about accounting and handling your business finances using services. You shouldn't miss it. It's Wyatt on the set.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is TWiT, This Week in Enterprise Tech, episode 440, recorded April 23rd, 2021. Bookkeeping in the Cloud. This episode of This Week in Enterprise Tech is brought to you by the Enterprise Tech 30. Enterprise Tech 30 is a definitive list of the 30 most promising B2B startups as determined by over 100 venture capitalists and 20 corporate development teams. Visit EnterpriseTech30.com to see 2021's winners. And by Bandwidth, a cloud-native carrier with a global network offering SIP trunking, toll-free E911 and messaging services, centralized telecom services, and successfully migrate communications to the cloud with the telecom power behind the majority of Gartner's UCaaS and CCaaS Magic Quadrant leaders. Learn more at bandwidth.com/enterprise. And by Thanks Canary. Detect attackers on your network while avoiding irritating false alarms. Get the alerts that matter. For 10% off and 60-day money-back guarantee, go to canary.tools/twit and enter the code TWIT in the How Do You Hear About Us box. Welcome to TWiT, This Week in Enterprise Tech, the show that's dedicated to you, the enterprise professional, the IT pro, and that geek who just wants to know how this world is connected. I'm your host, Louis Maresca, your guide through this big, giant world of the enterprise. But I definitely can't guide you by myself. I need to bring in the experts, the professionals, starting with our very own Mr. Curtis Franklin. He's a senior analyst at Omdia. Curtis, you know, we keep talking about it, but Black Hat's getting really close. I'm starting to see amazing stuff out there. How's it going on your side with all the content?
Going well. You know, I'm starting to look at what I'm going to be doing. I'm going to have a session at Black Hat because Omdia has an entire program where the analysts will be talking about what we see and what's coming up. So starting to put that together, starting to talk about how we're going to do it. And everybody is, I'm going to say, cautiously optimistic, hoping that we can do this year what we're calling a hybrid program, where some of it will be person-to-person in Las Vegas. Some of it will be virtual for those who can't or won't travel. But I think it's going to be a great program. It's already shaping up, and I think everyone involved is beginning to get very excited about what's going to be happening in late July and early August.
I really look forward to it. Thanks for being here, Curtis. Well, speaking of busy and a man of on the move, we have Mr. Brian Chee, net architect at Sky Fiber. Cheebert, I think there's some congratulations in order. You're all moved in. Congratulations.
Yeah, we had lots and lots and lots and lots of boxes. My garage is full. My living room is full. My dining room is full. And we are unpacking like crazy. Can't wait to find some of the cute toys because I want to build stuff. And, you know, this ought to be interesting because I found a hole through the back wall in my property, which is just about right for me to go and run some fiber through. So now if I can only find out who owns that backbone that goes right past the back of my house, maybe, just maybe, I can fire up a WISP in my neighborhood.
Fantastic. We'll have to see how that evolves for sure. Well, thanks for being here, Cheebert. Well, it's been quite the week in the enterprise, so we definitely get started here. Now, it ain't the Space Force, but it's a new task force being put together dedicated to rooting out and responding to the growing threat of ransomware. We'll talk about what the latest developments are there. Building upon hardware root trust, it's a difficult thing, but it may be more achievable now with all the tech that's coming out. We'll talk about it as well. Now, fintech is definitely a growing area of the industry. And today we have Lil Roberts. She's the CEO and founder of Zendu. And we're going to go geek out just about accounting software and handling your business finances using services. But before we get to all that goodness, let's go ahead and jump in this week's blips. Now, you all know emails, very vulnerable. It's a vulnerable attack surface. Now, it's open to spear phishing, business email compromise, and a very effective malware delivery system. SonicWall ES is a solution designed to protect email traffic and communication by preventing phishing emails and business email compromise attempts. Unfortunately, the bad news this week, there are three known zero-day attacks on that appliance. At least one known case of the active exploitation in the appliance has been recorded, in fact. Now, FireEye's Mandiant team discovered and disclosed the bugs to the SonicWall product security incident response team by investigating the post-exploitation web shell activity on the client system that pointed to SonicWall ES as the source of the compromise. According to Mandiant researchers, the vulnerabilities have been exploited in a attack chain to obtain administrative access and execute code on a vulnerable ES products. Now, the attack includes installing a backdoor file exposure and achieving lateral network movement. Now, the team added that this explicit case shows intimate knowledge of the SonicWall application and appliance. Now, the vulnerabilities are tracked as CVE-2021-20021 and 2022, with actually reported privately on March 26th and acknowledged on the 21st. And a hotfix was applied on April 9th. Now, there's also the 20,023, which was reported on April 7th, leading to a patch becoming available on the 19th. Now, you may be wondering what version of the appliance does it actually impacts here. Now, check to ensure that the SonicWall ES hosted email security versions from 10.0.1 and above are actually vulnerable, as well as the 7-9 versions, 7-9.2.2. Now, the 7-9 versions are actually at end of life in our legacy products, so they're not entitled to receive that security update. Too bad for them. Now, if you haven't already, update your device right now, especially if it's in that range. Now, the good thing is if you do have an active account and you're using their email security package and service, your device will be auto-updated. Good luck for you.
Reminder that even in the world of open source, rules still apply. On April 21st, Greg Koa Hartman, a fellow with the Linux Foundation and Linux kernel maintainer, banned the University of Minnesota from contributing to the Linux kernel and pledged to revert all previous patches submitted by the university's pending review. University of Minnesota, in response, has suspended a research project after complaints that two student researchers submitted intentionally vulnerable code to the maintainers of the Linux kernel as a way to investigate whether supply chain integrity issues affected the widely used Linux ecosystem. At the core of the kerfuffle is a research paper accepted to next month's prestigious IEEE Symposium on Security and Privacy. The paper describes a research project that aimed to determine the resilience of open source software projects to purposely flawed patches through which attackers could introduce vulnerabilities to be exploited at a later time. The researchers submitted at least three updates that could have added vulnerabilities to the Linux kernel. The research intended to, quote, investigate the insecurity of OSS from a critical perspective, the feasibility of a malicious committer stealthily introducing vulnerabilities such as use after free or UAF in OSS through hypocrite commits, seemingly beneficial minor commits that actually introduced other critical issues, end quote. However, actively undermining the software development process for open source creates significant work for the maintainers of the Linux kernel. In a discussion on the mailing list for the Linux network file system, Kroa Hartman roundly criticized the research, the breach of trust, and the auspices under which the researchers justified the experiments. The most problematic issue with the research is that the problem of supply chain integrity is a known issue that does not need proof, as actual attacks have been demonstrating its effectiveness, wrote Laura Abbott, a Linux kernel developer, on her blog. The researchers stressed that they designed the project to prevent the actual malicious patches from being merged with the Linux kernel or subsystems. The researchers also added that they honored the efforts that maintainers contributed to open source projects, but could not see a way to conduct the research without wasting maintainers' time. In response to concerns that the researchers' approach tainted the relationship between academia and industry, they apologized, but maintained that their research benefited the community overall.
Well, I've been using Dragon Dictate for quite a while, and, well, Microsoft just bought Nuance, the makers of Dragon Speech, for $16 billion. Wow. Well, earlier this week, Microsoft announced its plans to purchase Nuance for $56 per share, 23% above Nuance's closing price last Friday. The deal adds up to $16 billion cash outlay and total valuation for Nuance of about $19.7 billion, including that company's assumed debt. Well, without airing dirty laundry, let's say that Nuance has had some problems in the past that left the company reeling. However, after lots of challenges, the intellectual property seems to be back in-house. With strength in vertical markets like medical and finance, Nuance has been holding on. Dragon Dictate has the name recognition and the close ties to specialties like emergency medical facilities. Microsoft is combining their vertical market strength with Microsoft's base strength with the consumer market. All in all, this ought to be really interesting. And maybe let Microsoft offer better voice dictation systems. I'm looking forward to it.
Now, hacking activity in the Gaza Strip and West Bank has ramped up in recent years as rival Palestinian political parties spar with each other. And the Israeli-Palestinian conflict continues, and Palestinian hackers increasingly establish themselves on the global stage. Now, Facebook has uncovered two digital espionage campaigns out of Palestine, active in 2019 and 2020. Now, they actually exploited a range of devices and platforms, including unique spyware that targeted iOS. Now, the researchers link one set of attackers to Palestine's Preventative Security Service, an intelligence group under the West Bank's Fatah ruling party. Now, in this campaign, the group primarily targeted the Palestinian territories in Syria, with some additional activity in Turkey, Iraq, Lebanon, and Libya. Now, the hackers seemed largely focused on attacking human rights and anti-Fatah activists, journalists, and entities like the Iraqi military and Syrian oppositions. Now, the other group, the longtime actor Arid Viper, associated with Hamas, focused on targets within Palestine like Fatah, political party members, government officials, security forces, and students. Interesting. Now, Viper established an expansive attack infrastructure for its campaigns, including hundreds of websites that launched phishing attacks, hosted iOS and Android malware, or functioned as command and control servers for the malware. Now, the group used both off-the-shelf malware and its own Android spyware masquerading as a secure chat app to target victims. Now, the chat app collected call logs, location, contact information, SMS messages, and device metadata. It also sometimes included a keylogger. The attackers also used publicly available Android and Windows malware, and the researchers saw evidence that the attackers made a fake content management platform for Windows that targeted journalists who wanted to submit articles for publication. A lot of different targets going on there. The app didn't actually work, but came bundled with Windows malware. Now, the creation of these attacks reflects a broader trend in recent years of more experimentation and innovation outside of major hacking powers like the United States, China, and Russia. As the targeted iOS attacks become more and more common, the lower the stakes become for attackers to put something out there and make the best of it.
Well, tech spending is climbing as digital business initiatives grow. Enterprise organizations can expect an increase in funds for technology spending in the next couple of years, but the source of funds for many new digital business initiatives will more frequently come from business departments outside of IT. This shift means that while technology spending is on the increase, the budget controlled by the CIO could possibly be only a piece of that overall tech spending. This is according to a new IT spending forecast from Gartner that projects worldwide IT spending for 2021 will hit $4.1 trillion, an 8.4% increase over 2020. Whether or not the CIO controls all the technology spending has to do with how that executive has positioned his or her role in the organization. For CIOs who have made new digital business initiatives and product development a part of their charter, they will have more control over total tech spending within the organization, according to John David Lovelock, chief forecaster at Gartner. It comes down to whether the budget item is supporting the business or whether it's funding the value of the that the business provides to customers. For those CIOs who aren't yet at this point, Lovelock advises that they work with their CTOs or work to become the CTO with the goal of bringing a value proposition to the company. Social software, collaboration platforms, and human capital management software are categories that are capturing increased spending dollars in 2021 as organizations focus on the employee experience and well-being a year into the pandemic. While a great deal of attention was placed on work from home, work from anywhere, and remote work in 2020, the quick pivot to those areas this year, more attention is going to how workers are experiencing this new way of working.
I want to congratulate people. It's a victory for municipal broadband as Washington state lawmakers end restrictions. The Washington state legislature has voted to end limits on municipal broadband, and the bill lifting those restrictions now awaits the signature of Democratic Governor Jay Inslee. The state Senate passed the bill Sunday in a 27-22 vote, and the state House passed it on February 23rd by a vote of 60-37. The bill reverses decades of bad policy, according to the story. Washington was one of only 18 states with a state law prohibiting some local government from offering broadband directly to the public. Democratic Representative Drew Hansen, the bill's lead sponsor, wrote on Twitter, "Long overdue, thanks to the bipartisan group of senators who stood up for public broadband today." The Senate vote went mostly along party lines, but one Republican, Representative Brad Hawkins, voted yay, and three Democrats, Steve Hobbs, Mark Mullett, and Lisa Wellman, voted nay. I was privileged to hear about a couple community broadband efforts at the Wispapalooza conference in Las Vegas, only to hear how legislators were trying to put the kibosh on some of these efforts. The bottom line is that all too often, larger ISPs are unwilling to invest in those last 100 feet or so to get from the street into a building unless there are more than 40 units in said building. Well, enter wireless internet service providers and a community broadband where community money will build the backbones and the street to building segment that all too many ISPs are currently unwilling to do. Hey, I got hit by a $30,000 estimate to go a whole 20 meters from the street through a pipe already in place into the building for one of my research groups. My opinion? It's good for the Washington State seeing the logic align communities to fill the gap that the big ISPs have been unwilling to fill for too long.
Well, still burning from last month's dump of phone numbers belonging to 500 million Facebook users, the social giant has a new privacy crisis. That's right. This time it's a tool on a massive scale that links Facebook accounts with their associated email addresses, even when users choose settings to keep them from being public. Now, a video circulating this week showed a researcher demonstrating a tool named Facebook Email Search version 1.0, which he said could link Facebook accounts to as many as 5 million email addresses per day. That's a lot of number crunching there. The researchers who said he went public after Facebook said it didn't link or didn't think the weakness he found was important enough to be fix-fed the tool, he actually fix-fed the tool of 65,000 email addresses and watched what happened next. Now, the researcher spent about $10 to buy about 200 odd Facebook accounts. And within 3 minutes, he's able to do this for 6,000 email accounts. Now, a Facebook representative didn't respond to a questioning asked if the company told the researcher it didn't consider the vulnerability important enough to warrant a fix. The representative said that Facebook engineers believe that they have mitigated the leak by disabling the technique shown in the video. Now, the tool Facebook Email Search exploited a front-end vulnerability that he reported to Facebook recently, but Facebook didn't consider it important. So Facebook has been under fire, not just for providing the means for these massive collections of data, but also for actively promoting the idea that they pose minimal risk to their users. Now, it's not clear if anyone actively exploited this bug to build a massive database, but certainly wouldn't be a surprise if they actually did. continues to be wise not to use your actual contact information and email addresses on your social network accounts. And for goodness sake, please do not link your social network accounts to essential services as well. Well, folks, that does it for the blips. Next up, the bites. But before we get to the bites, we have to thank a really great sponsor of This Week in Enterprise Tech, and that is the Enterprise Tech 30. The Enterprise Tech 30 is seminal research developed by Wing Venture Capital in partnership with NASDAQ. Now, the private enterprise tech is an opaque sector. You have no idea which company is doing well or poorly due to caginess around growth and revenue, especially as sales cycles can be long and arduous. Now, many ranked lists feature startups or tech disruptors, but these lists often are dominated by consumer brands or more mature B2B startups everyone already knows. Now, these lists create credibility and trust that a company featured will deliver a real tangible outcome. However, this is often not the case because many of these lists are produced by lobbying or pay-to-play methods and are subject to bias or based on how much hype a company can actually generate. Now, the Enterprise Tech 30 brings to light the enterprise startups who have the most potential to technically shift how enterprises operate for the better. Now, awardees to the ET 30 are on the fast track of growth, change how business is done, and are expected to be future IPOs and multi-billion dollar exits. It's not possible to lobby your way onto the ET 30. In fact, you can only be selected and become a part of the elite community. Now, the Enterprise Tech 30 focuses on companies with potential at all stages of maturity rather than only showcasing companies with mature businesses and undeniable traction. Now, the ET 30 could be considered a buying guide for enterprise executives seeking to bring more validated and credible digital innovation into their organizations. Now, Enterprise Tech 30 founders should see inclusion as the highest endorsement of their current and future success. Now, founders that aspire to build publicly traded companies should see inclusion as a watershed moment in their founder's journey. Now, tech executives and high performance operators will use the list to help guide their decisions on what companies to join. The 2021 edition of the Enterprise Tech 30, brought to you by Wing Venture Capital and NASDAQ, just launched. Head over to EnterpriseTech30.com to see who made this year's list. That's EnterpriseTech30.com. And we thank ET30, Wing, and NASDAQ for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, it's now time for the bites. Now, you may have heard about the high-profile network security incidents such as Russian-backed SolarWinds hacking campaign and the Microsoft Exchange server vulnerabilities that Microsoft attributed to Chinese hackers. Now, we've talked about them a lot. And in fact, these in general are the gift that keeps on giving in the security world, as Curtis has said to us. Well, the DOJ looks to be gearing up for a campaign to combat future attacks from these types of attackers. According to an agency memo obtained by news organizations, the Justice Department has created a new task force dedicated to rooting out and responding to the growing threat of ransomware. That's right. The new initiative follows what the memo describes as the worst year ever for ransomware attacks. Now, incidents in which hackers seize control of victims' computers and refuse to unlock them until they receive payment. Sounds familiar, right? A lot of those going on around here. Now, the DOJ effort highlights how cybersecurity threats have become a major focus of the current administration. According to the memos, the new task force will unify efforts across the federal government to pursue and disrupt ransomware attackers. Now, actions could be including from takedowns of servers used to spread ransomware to seizures of these criminals' enterprises' ill-gotten gains. Now, the memo continues on and on. Now, also, the DOJ plans to devote more resources to training and intelligence sharing and reach out to private sector to gain insight into ransomware and extortion threats. This is a very interesting area because ransomware is one of those things where attacks come in many different sectors. They usually attack the most vulnerable. We're seeing a lot more in healthcare. I want to bring my co-host in. Now, I want to start with you, Curtis. You read about security. You read about the enterprise a lot. Is a task force developed by the government, is it going to be able to help the private sectors here in this type of area?
Well, I think that what the government can do is set out some best practices, set out some things that have known good results, and basically provide a framework that private enterprise can follow. Ideally, this is something that insurance companies will accept, because we know that insurance companies are being involved more and more in ransomware. And it will give, we hope, some confidence to the private sector that there are things that can be done. You know, when I talk to especially small businesses, there is very much an attitude of there's nothing to do about this, especially as ransomware has moved to a form of, well, forcing the hand of the victim by threatening to release personal files and sensitive files, in addition to just not unencrypting them. It takes away the power of something like a good backup scheme. So to my mind, if the private sector feels that the government has put good, solid thinking into this, has applied solid expertise to the problem, then it's going to do nothing but good in helping increase the confidence that we can actually get ahead of the problem for once.
Right, right. Jim, but I was really a similar question to you. I mean, obviously you worked for the government before. You know, do they have the resources to help all these different sectors in this type of attacks?
Actually, one of the best resources that I can suggest to anyone is contact your local FBI office and find out about InfraGuard. It's spelled InfraGuard. It's a public-private cooperative organization. There's the Bureau provides some resources and provides some technology and people, but it gets you a way to see what are normally government-only news bulletins. It also gets you access to a lot of interesting training. The InfraGuard chapter that I was part of would bring in all kinds of speakers to talk about key issues. Obviously, ransomware is one of them, but there's a lot of things that need to happen. One of the things that allows you to go and actually do something about it, you know, even though it's after the fact, is logs. You know, if you have a good collection of logs that, you know, sometimes are written, to, say, to CDRs, so they're right ones, that provides the law enforcement world a way of going out and trying to do something about these people once and for all. And there has been quite a few success stories on people that have committed ransomware attacks being arrested in their country. A lot of national governments are sick and tired of ransomware, and being able to prosecute across national lines is now becoming possible. And in some cases, normal. So I really would say get together with InfraGuard. There's also some great cybersecurity user groups in various metropolitan areas. Sharing your information, learning from each other, I think is one of your best tools you can possibly do on trying to combat these bad guys.
I agree. Now, Curtis, I want to throw this back to you because obviously you cover a lot of enterprise. What are organizations themselves doing to combat against ransomware?
Well, first of all, most organizations are really reluctant to tell you what they're doing to combat ransomware. I think most of them would sooner divulge the recipe to their secret sauce or cola drink or fried chicken than to give you what they're doing against ransomware. Having said that, the two basic things that companies are doing is, first, most every enterprise has now gotten very serious about backup and recovery. This is seen now as simple table stakes. The other thing that they're doing is spending a great deal of time educating their users. It is widely known that the vast majority of ransomware attacks begin when an employee somewhere clicks on a link, opens an attachment, responds in some way to a phishing or spam message that then implants the malicious payload on the system, where it begins doing lateral spreading. So stopping that initial bit of badness is where companies are spending a lot of time. It's one of the areas that I'm beginning to do some research on, the whole notion of education and training for employees, because if an employee is not an asset to help you guard against ransomware, then they are probably your biggest vulnerability.
Thank you, Curtis. I agree. Well, folks, that does it for that bite. Let's go on to the next bite because it's a pretty interesting topic. I know I've paying attention to Secure Silicon for a while, and there's been a lot of talk about hardware root of trust and how difficult it is. But now with some new secure hardware, it's making it a little bit easier. What's going on there, Curtis?
Well, you know, one of the things that makes things hard right now is that with the cloud, with virtual machines, we've gotten into a computing era of multiple layers of abstraction. Applications, services, applets, no code, everything means that sooner or later you have to trust something, but where that trust exists, well, it can be difficult to pin down. Neil McDonald, a distinguished research vice president at Gartner, said that everything depends on the trust and resilience of the layers below it. So if you want real trust, you have to go in and establish that trust at the lowest possible level. And that's where the concept of a hardware-based root of trust comes in. The idea here is that the computer will always boot with legitimate code. Doug Haskell, senior manager of security and open firmware futures at HPE, says a root of trust is ideally based on a hardware validated boot process that ensures the system can only be started using codes from an immutable source. Now, this isn't new. The Trusted Platform Module, or TPM, is almost certainly inside any laptop or desktop computer you're using right now. That is a foundation piece. Now, this is firmware supported by ARM, AMD, Intel, and a lot of other special purpose hardware. However, there are efforts in the industry to put that root of trust a little deeper into the chipset. Why? Because there have been some firmware vulnerabilities like TPM fail, Meltdown, and Spectre. DARPA, the same people who gave us the internet long, long ago, have come out with the Secure Silicon Initiative, which is supposed to make processors more inherently secure. The good news is that a growing number of hardware infrastructure and cloud companies like HPE, Dell, AWS, Microsoft, and Google are engineering more secure systems based on this deeper hardware root of trust. Now, I want to talk to my co-host about this. Lou, you first, because you're involved in the kind of software that enterprises use on a moment-by-moment basis. How valuable is this idea of having a hardware level, I mean, not even firmware, but a hardware level root of trust that all of the subsequent layers can be built upon?
You know, it's really important because it also builds upon the fact that you can do some really complex things, encryption and so on, without having to have additional hardware to do it. And I think that that's one of the biggest things, because it basically lowers that barrier of entry for software developers, for hardware developers to maintain that security around things. And I think that that's where that root of trust can stem from. You know, obviously, if you build upon those layers, like, for instance, you add the ability to detect presence. You know, I use YubiKeys for that. There's lots of other things you can build upon layers upon layers. And when you know you start with that really good foundation, a really good root, you know, whatever you add on top is obviously just icing on the cake, additional layers of security. So, yeah, I think that that's one of the biggest things, is that with these types of hardware abstractions, it gives developers and software makers and service makers a way to to focus more on their layers and their areas rather than having to worry about, you know, the device being compromised or you know, data being leaked out. So, you know, I think that when you're buying a device for your organization, a lot of times you're going to say, oh, let's go find the most powerful, cheapest device out there. But if you're not looking for things like, you know, whether the device has TPM chip and whether it supports 2.0 firmwares for those TPMs, like these are things that you should be paying attention to, only because those are the latest and greatest ways that organizations can take more advantage to more secure hardware, more secure software, encryption, and so on. So, you know, I think it's a big thing, and I think that organizations should pay more attention to it.
Well, I agree that this is the sort of thing that organizations should have firmly in their crosshairs. Now, Brian, I want to turn to you because as we've heard it talked about and as Lou has discussed, this sounds like the sort of thing that is so good in every situation, and therefore there really doesn't need to be any discussion about this. Companies should insist upon it. No one should buy anything without it, and we will be secure forevermore. What's wrong with what I've just said?
Well, what's wrong is what I haven't heard. The big hypervisor players have long touted they want to be able to do load balancing, be able to shrink and expand the virtual machine or the cloud upon demand and load. Well, what happens when the TPM chip is, say, tied to a blade in a blade server? Is there going to be a TPM chip for a blade array or a cloud array? That's something that I keep asking. Goes, well, how are you going to store this? How is it going to cross between blades? Because one of our favorite things is you run full blast, you have, you know, X number of virtual machines running to load balance, then it goes, you know, it's after dark. The load isn't there. I don't want to have to pay for, say, 30 virtual machines running. I want to shrink it back, say, to one or two. But what happened to all my encryption information? What happened to my trusted root? Is that going to be there? I think that's something that needs to be in this standard. We need to have a way for the hardware to handle load balancing across multiple physical platforms. And I just haven't heard that in the conversation so far.
Well, obviously, the answer is to have a single TPM that serves all the virtual machines, all the customers, and everything shared across all the tenants in a shared space. After all, history has shown that nothing could possibly go wrong in a scenario like that. You know, Brian's quite right. This is one of many things where the devil is absolutely in the details. I think it's a good thing that we're looking at this. It is absolutely true that the lower in the stack we have this root of trust, the better things can be. But what we don't want to do is introduce yet another universal vulnerability. We saw just how much fun Spectrum and Meltdown can be. Imagine if something were a couple of layers below that. I could just go ahead and plan to retire on that level of vulnerability. I'd be writing about it for as long as my fingers would move. Well, that's it for this intriguing guide. Something tells me we'll hear more about this later on. I can't believe this will be the last release about this particular issue, but we've got a lot more great show coming up. And Lou, I think it's time for you to take us into that great, bright future.
Thank you, Curtis. Well, folks, that does it for all of our great bites. But next up, we have a great guest to drop some knowledge on the Twilight Riot. Before we do, we have to thank another great sponsor of This Week in Enterprise Tech, and that's Bandwidth. Now, many of you may have old legacy systems or PBX systems, as well as new SIP ones as well. And you may be moving office locations or even working remotely. And there are lots of questions when it comes to these services, like, what happens with emergency services if you're remote? Well, Bandwidth provides communications services built with innovative enterprises. Now, SIP and emergency services infused with the power of software create smoother migrations and more innovation-ready platform for your cloud future. Now, centralized SIP with a cloud-native carrier. Years of organic growth, mergers, and acquisitions have resulted in a complex tapestry of legacy infrastructure, which only makes getting these new cloud platforms more complicated. Now, centralizing SIP with a trusted partner is a critical first step. But Bandwidth's software-driven approach to SIP power empowers enterprises with an unmatched level of control and visibility that includes a lot of things. Listen to this. Triggered or scheduled porting, real-time number ordering and provisioning, as well as control features such as failover, call forwarding, and real-time reroutes. They solve for E911 needs. Capturing precise location information at call time is critical for your organization, but converting PRI lines and centralizing SIP can put an organization in jeopardy with accessing accurate location information and maintaining compliance with emergency regulations. Now, manage evolving regulatory requirements, multiple offices, and nomadic workers with Bandwidth's emergency services built for the modern mobile workforce. Protect your enterprise and your employees with precise location information and easily add or change address information. Now, access a variety of options, including both static and advanced or dynamic E911 options. Work with a network operator who is just easier to do business with. Everyone says they have great support, but they show it through their 98% CSAT score and consistent SLA attainment by their support teams. Now, with Bandwidth's unmatched industry support, every customer receives named implementation specialists to usher you through a tailored migration plan, a dedicated team of porting experts so you have an easy migration experience, dedicated support personnel and industry experts to manage needs as you scale over time, and in fact, 24/7 network monitoring assurance by their in-house network operations center, clear and always available escalation paths, and customer-driven prioritization of support tickets. In fact, Zoom, Genesys, and RingCentral all use Bandwidth. Now, Do It for Microsoft Teams is for those enterprises contemplating migrating their telecom to Microsoft Teams. Now, it's the only comprehensive solution for direct routing and Microsoft-certified E911 available direct from carrier. Simplify your team's migration and save an average of 40% compared to Microsoft calling plans. As the telecom power behind the majority of Gartner's UCaaS and CCaaS Magic Quadrant leaders, Bandwidth is the best positioned to help your enterprise centralize telecom services and successfully migrate communications to these cloud platforms. Learn more at bandwidth.com/enterprise. That's bandwidth.com/enterprise. And we thank Bandwidth for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, it's my favorite part of the show. We actually get to bring in a guest to drop some knowledge on the Twilight Riot. Today we have Lil Roberts. She's the CEO and founder of Zendu. Welcome to the show, Lil.
Hey, guys. Super happy to be here. Honored to be with you today. You guys have such an awesome vibe.
Thank you. We really enjoy each other. Now, we're actually really glad to have you on because we don't really talk about this sector that much, but it's actually a really big growing sector. But before we get to all that, our audience loves to hear people's origin stories. Can you maybe take us through a short journey through tech and what brought you to Zendu?
Yeah, absolutely. So serial entrepreneur, actually, this is what's unique about me is all my businesses have been different industries. My last business was in manufacturing. And technology and the internet sat on the doorstep and really decimated a lot of that industry. So I went out hunting and said, what industry is analog that needs to be brought into the digital world? And accounting is it.
That's right. It's true. It's true. Now, I actually started my software career. I worked at a company that developed UltraTax for CPAs. I can tell, definitely tell you it's interesting working for CPAs. I think it's now developed by Thomson Reuters. And then I moved into Great Plains, which is an ERP software. So I have a special place in my heart for financial software, and I can definitely tell you there's a lot of room for growth. What does Zendu? Maybe we can just get started with what is Zendu doing different than what's going on in the market today?
Yeah, absolutely. So we actually use UltraTax for the tax returns. So Zendu is reshaping the accounting industry by leveraging technology to deliver financial peace of mind to small business owners, right? So what that means is that through technology, we give them their financials with a transparent pricing, speed, and productivity on our team that's not attainable by the traditional CPA industry. So we have built, you guys have probably heard about the Knowledge Work Cloud, right? And so our platform, proprietary platform, is built on the Knowledge Work Cloud.
Interesting. Now, it sounds like you do a lot more than a standard financial package would do. Obviously, it sounds like you work with different facets of the financials. So obviously, you said you worked with UltraTax. That's interesting because not a lot of packages integrate with tax software. Some of them only do, you know, handling your ledgers or your transactions, but they don't necessarily handle all of those different integration touch points. Is this all done automatically? Is it actually, do you have to maintain that as a user of the software? Do you get help for that type of integration?
Yeah. So to break it down for you, Lou, what we do is that we have wrapped around Xero and QBO on the bookkeeping side, right? So our proprietary platform has wrapped around that. We have a mobile app and a desktop portal on the customer facing side that our customers can get their financials and have everything 24/7, palm of their hand, right? The tax side, you're very correct. The tax side, UltraTax is not friendly to have an API that allows you to write automation in. So we're waiting for a tax package to come out that covers all 50 states because Zendu has customers in 45 states and 12 countries. There are typically e-com or MSP providers that are outside of the US. So that's on the external customer facing side. On the internal team side, our platform, what it does is it's data-driven prioritization, right, along with workflow and then measurement. So then our team, we have 5x the traditional accounting team than what a traditional CPA can do. So we're tech first in fintech, and specifically we're an early mover. There's probably 7 or 8 of us that are early movers changing that industry.
It's interesting. Yeah. I think, like you said, it's an interesting industry because things kind of either move slowly in some areas, but then move faster in other. We see a lot of organizations, small, medium-sized businesses, they're using things like Quicken or QuickBooks. And then they look to migrate to some of these bigger products, you know, like SAP or so on as they grow. Where do you kind of place like Zendu? Where does it kind of get placed in? Can it be scalable? Can it just start small and grow big to like enterprise scale?
Yeah. So we take care of the 31 million small business owners that are less than 20 employees. So there are some of those companies, and typically they're VC backed. We're VC backed. And so typically you're a VC backed company and you're going to scale out of using QBO or Xero and you're going to go into NetSuite or Sage. Now our platform can wrap around NetSuite. We can wrap around Sage and continue to do what we're doing, but we're focusing on the 20 or less in the SMB space. And for us, where we're headed, so we're in V1 of our ruling engine, right? And the long-term vision of the company is 15,000 small business owners, puts us at 100 million ARR. And then obviously puts us into the unicorn because we're on a subscription base. So we're you have the regular true SaaS, right, which is technology only. And then now you have this knowledge work cloud coming in that is the other SaaS, which is service as a software. And that's where you're taking out the repetitive RPA stuff and allowing the humans to do the most human level of work.
Right. Now, one, I'm sure that the rest of the guys here behind me will, once we bring them in, they'll start talking about security and other things. But I am curious about it because a lot of organizations, when they move their data to the cloud, like a lot of these applications, they tend to, small, medium businesses, they sometimes like to keep their data on premise. They like to keep it where one or two people or, small group of people are interacting with that financial data and using a piece of software that they understand how to use. Moving this data to the cloud, making it more of a SaaS offering is sometimes, organizations get a little uncomfortable doing it. Are you seeing organizations migrate and being more open to moving to the cloud with this type of data?
1,000%. So the dinosaurs, right, people that don't want to do online banking, they're not going to move over. But what's happening is that typically in this range of small business owners, they're not even doing their books. They're running off an Excel sheet. They're running their business from their bank account. They wake up at 7 in the morning. They look at the bank balance and they say, yep, can live another day and pay the team. And they're missing the other half of the business, which is the expenses. So what we do is we're doing the bookkeeping for them. We're putting it at a reasonable price because the traditional industry had no rhyme or reason on pricing, right? So technology always brings transparency, and that's what we've done is we brought transparency to the industry, we brought communication to the industry, and where we see a lot of our customers, our top two categories are e-com and professional services. So they get it, right? And they're the forefront of businesses in this category of less than 20 employees.
I was going to just ask that, like what different part of the market with different target markets were you guys targeting? Is it just those markets that it can be used for all different parts of the market and you're just seeing e-com kind of jump in early?
Yeah, e-com lives their life on digital, so they're not going to do it through the analog way, right? You know, no longer do you need to get in your car and go down to the CPA's office and sit down with a human to go through all that. That's painful for a business owner. They don't want to do that. They just want to get their books done and their taxes done and be compliant, right? And move on and grow their business. So that's really where we're at. But, MSP providers, e-com, professional services, trade businesses, anybody with less than 20 employees. Sweet spot, probably about 8 to 10 employees. We're having a great time. I mean, we're disrupting the industry. We're helping small businesses. We didn't go backwards in COVID, and we're taking technology and utilizing it to help small businesses in a very meaningful way. And the data that we're getting, like, really, let's talk about the data. The data is what's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's we should go to there, because I think that the interesting thing here is we're seeing a lot of organizations wondering what tools they need. Like, I know that they have lots of data, they have lots of information flowing. Obviously, they have to, because they have their sales coming in, they have their buying inventory. They're trying to handle all these things, and they're not really sure exactly what they need, what tools they need. What are some of the tools that Zendu provides to these small and medium businesses that can help them get started, help them understand where they need to go next?
Yeah, absolutely. So on the financial front, right, most people come in and they have nothing. So we're going to, if they're e-com or MSPs or any kind of newer style tech, we're going to bring them into Xero, which is super simple to use. It uses language like spend and earn. And then they're going to use our platform to communicate with our people and to get their numbers and to have their taxes. And then they don't care what you use for their tax return. They don't want to be part of that. All they want to know is that you're going to save them the maximum amount on taxes, right? Put the money in their pocket. And so we want them to look at the data-driven charts and ways that they can save money and give them visibility into, hey, can they take a great deal on some inventory? Do they have the cash flow? 93% of small businesses run their business from their bank account, and 82% of them that fail, Lou, they fail because they ran out of cash, not because they weren't profitable. And that's really what we're changing through technology. And second stage to that is to be able to give, to normalize the data and to give the small business owner back, like a pizza owner in Nashville, to say, hey, you know what? All the other pizza owners around you are buying from Cheney, you're buying from Sysco, and they have 2 points better on their cost of goods. And that's using, machine learning, AI, and data-driven prioritization in data to give it back insights.
Fantastic. Well, when we come back, I do want to bring my co-host in, because they're chomping at the bit here and they have some questions for you. But before we get to all that, we do have to thank another great sponsor of This Week in Enterprise Tech, and that's Thinks Canary. Now, the last thing anyone wants or needs right now is a data breach. Now, rather than a villain lying in the wait, you have a hero. That's right. Thinks Canary is waiting for them. Now, companies usually find out too late that they've been compromised, even if they've already spent millions on IT security. It just wasn't enough. A Canary has completely changed the game. It's designed to be installed and configured in minutes, and pardon the pun, left to its own devices. Now, you don't have to think about it anymore. Now, attackers prowling a target network look for juicy content, right? Well, they'll browse Active Directory for file servers and explore file shares looking for documents. They'll try to find default passwords against network devices and web services, and will scan for open services across the entire network. Now, Canaries can be deployed through your entire network. You can make them look identical to a network, a router, switch, a NAS server, a Linux box, or even a Windows server, so attackers won't know they've been caught. Now, Thinks Canaries are designed to look like the things the hackers want to get to. You can put fake files on them or enroll them in Active Directory. Now, when attackers investigate further, they give themselves away and you're instantly notified. Now, you can also use Canary tokens. Now, these are tiny tripwires that you can drop into hundreds of places, and they'll follow the Thinks Canary philosophy of trivial to deploy with a ridiculously high quality of signal. Now, if an alert happens, Canary will notify you in any way you want. Plus, you won't be inundated with false alarms. Now, you can get alerts by many different ways. Listen to this. You can get either email or text message right on your console, even in Slack, webhooks, syslog, or even just use their API to pull those logs out. Now, choose the option that works best for your business. Now, it's important that companies know there are two things when it comes to data breaches. One, hackers will usually take that path of least resistance, and it's typically your staff. And two, it takes on average 191 days for a company to realize there's been a data breach. That's really too long, and Things Canary solves the problem for you. The people behind Canary have been in the security game for almost two decades and have trained companies, militaries, and governments on how to break into networks. That's the knowledge they've used to build Canary. Things Canaries are deployed all over the world on all seven continents and are one of the best tools against data breaches. Visit canary.tools/twit, and for just $7,500 per year, you'll get five Canaries, your own hosted console, upgrade, support, and maintenance. And if you use code TWIT in the How to Hear About Us box, you'll get 10% off the price for life. We know you'll love Things Canary, but if you're not happy, you can always return your Canaries with their two-month money-back guarantee for a full refund. That's canary.tools/twit, and enter the code TWIT in the How to Hear About Us box. And we thank Things Canary for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, we'll be talking with Lil Roberts. She's the CEO and founder of Zendu. I do want to bring my co-host back in because they have some really great questions. Cheebert, I'll start with you first.
Well, I want to talk about tools. A mom and pop store, it's an old story. Mom and pop store starts growing. They become popular. Now, all of a sudden, they've got this giant shoebox full of receipts for their expenses. What kind of tools do you have to try and let that mom and pop store grow beyond just mom and pop?
Yeah, totally. Great question, Brian. So one, we tell them throw the shoebox of receipts out, because in today's world, everything that you put on a credit card and in your bank is digital and you don't need those receipts anymore. So people may tell you, oh, put it on Expensify or this or that. You don't need it. Forget about it. What we do is we just take it right off their hand. So we make it seamless in the background. They connect through a view-only access to the bank, right? We connect Xero or QBO. We didn't want to write the general ledger from scratch. What we wanted to do is write the software that puts the automation into the process of doing the bookkeeping. And the small business owner shouldn't be doing the bookkeeping. So we basically say, take your time back, go back to running your business, let us handle that side of it, and we're going to give you phenomenal financials that we use a lot of technology. We're on Snowflake, and we use Snowflake for the quality assurance of all of this. So, and actually, Brian, we just got a great review from a customer, Patty Cakes Bakery in Hawaii, that sent a review out saying how much they love us and that they were so happy that they found us and we found them.
That's great. Well, here's another horror story that I've run into with all kinds. They start off with one code to describe a service or an inventory item. Then someone else comes in and they change it. So you start ending up with all these different categorizations of services or things like that. In this day and age, when we have machine learning and AI, are there some tools in Zendu that help you, normalize this data to the point where we can remove that human error on categorization of services and expenses?
1,000%. Were you in our building today, Brian? Because we have our MVP of our ruling engine, and it's built on that, along with a special way of looking at the chart of accounts. And that was the discussion today, that when we don't have a problem when we have somebody that brand new, we're putting them on. But when they've had four, five, six different bookkeepers in the history of their business, and they've categorized things all different ways, there is a way to go in and to normalize that data. And it is through, using Snowflake and remapping and doing a lot of those types of tips and tricks. So that's not for them. That's what we're doing in the background. And that's, partly how we're reshaping the industry, because we're taking the human out of it and we're putting in the compute power, right? And we're putting in all the guardrails to make sure you have the quality. And we're understanding the industries.
Okay, you're right. You're understanding the industries, and I appreciate that. I come from generations of small business owners, so I have an appreciation for what you can provide. One of my questions, though, is when you're talking about these very small businesses, do you see yourself as primarily being an aid to their bookkeepers or a service that can be the bookkeeper for, say, a company that's too small to hire one full time?
So a couple of things. So first, Curtis, I love the fact that you have a typewriter in the background. So I just have to tell you that that's lots of fun and amazing. So good on you, right? So they're not doing the bookkeeping at all. And so a lot of them get in trouble in their business because they're not doing the bookkeeping. And we're utilizing technology to do the bookkeeping we have. So to give you an idea, a typical accounting company will have, they'll have a team member, an accountant or a bookkeeper doing, say, 20 customers a month, right? The most that we've done is one team member doing 140 customers. And that's because of technology and because of workflow and process. Now we've backed it down and our team members run about 70. But with this ruling engine for two specific industries that we have, we're going to be able to, V1, we're going to be able to 50% of the transactions are going to be handled through compute power. And they're going to be spot on right because you're taking the human out of thinking it could be this or it could be that. And you're going to put the feedback loop in it. And that's, you know, that's what technology does, right? I mean, this is what you guys do. Technology knocks on the door of an industry and then poof, it just decimates it. And it makes it better for the other people, right? So Uber made it better for the human experience of needing a ride because now you know where your books are. You knew where your car was. We make it better for the small business owner because number one, we're in touch with them all throughout the month. They can check what's happening through a mobile app, which is how they want to work. The accounting industry doesn't have mobile apps, right? Their bookkeeper doesn't have a mobile app to say, hey, boss, this is where I'm at. You know, hey, Mr. Business Owner. And we do. So they know exactly where they're at.
Okay, so I have two follow-up questions on two different fronts. The first, you know, we were talking earlier in the show about ransomware. For many of these small business owners, security is something that they are concerned about, but many times they don't really feel super confident in their ability to secure their own business data. If they're worried about giving their financial data to the cloud, you know, what do you tell them? Is it as secure in your cloud as it would be on the computer in their office?
Actually, it's more secure. So they are, one, the banks have their own layer of security. So the small business owners, almost everybody is doing banking online, right? So small business owners are accessing their banks online. So bank has first level security. Then we're tying that into Xero and QBO, both multi-billion dollar companies, second level of security. Then we're feeding that all in through our AWS cloud, another level of security. And all their payment information is happening through Stripe, which is another, $100 billion company. And so they have so much security in there that it's way more secure than what's in their office.
All right. And my final question, I don't know many small business owners who don't at some level look at Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk and go, I can do that. So many of these small business owners, they do have growth in mind. You're doing a what sounds like a really fine job at the very small organizations. In the long run, are you prepared to grow with your customers? Or at a certain point, do you have mechanisms in place so that you can make the handoff to more traditional big enterprise software packages a bit more, less traumatic for business owners than might be the case?
Yes and yes. So it's yes on both. If you'd like, I'll dive into how.
Please do.
Okay. So number one, they're not as small as you think. We have many business owners that have millions of dollars in profit. Our head of tax, Lewis, who's phenomenal, he comes from a forensic background, was telling me 2 weeks ago how he was working with a customer and saved him $160,000 on their tax return. And that's amazing, right? So they're not super small. Like, we're not taking on the people that are 50,000, 100,000. We want people, unless they're professional services and say 200,000 and above. We're taking on people that have, you know, businesses anywhere from, call it 500,000, 600,000 on up to, you know, 10, 15 million, 20 million e-com businesses. When it's time for them, if they're a scaling company and they need to move out of QBO or out of Xero and they need to go to a CFO, we're going to help them make that transition because we have all their data, and all the data can be through CSVs, then taken out and uploaded. And not only that, the CFO or the accounting person in their organization is going to be appreciative to have a company that understands so deeply about the business and can help make that transition way easier than if they were using a traditional accountant who doesn't necessarily understand their business in depth and doesn't have all the data that we have.
Fantastic. Thank you, Lil, so much. Unfortunately, all good things come to an end. Lil, thank you so much for being here. We're running a little low on time, but we do want to give you a chance to tell the folks at home where they can learn more about Zendu and maybe how they can get started.
Oh, awesome. Greatly appreciated. If they go to Zendu.com or they can reach out to sales@Zendu.com. And if they mention Twyatt, we'll give them 50% off on their third month. First month is free. Second month they pay. And the third month we'll give them 50% off.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. Well, folks, you've done it again. You sat through another Out of the Best Enterprise podcast in the universe. So tune your podcatcher to Twyatt. I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible, especially to my co-host, starting with my own Mr. Brian Chiebert. What's going on for you in the coming weeks, and where can people find you?
I'm buried in boxes.
They can't find you. They can't find you.
So, yeah, one of my friends was making a wisecrack that, oh, did they wall my wife in, you know, with all the boxes? Oh, boy, oh, boy. We've got lots and lots and lots of cardboard. It's going to be interesting trying to get rid of it all. But anyway, I'm still playing at being producer. And to do that, I need show ideas. And we've gotten some spectacular show ideas and guest suggestions from our audience. Now, you can hit me on Twitter. I'm ADVNETLAB, Advanced Net Lab. But you know what? Some people like email better. And my email is Chiebert, spelled Cheebert, at twit.tv. But you know what? Why don't you use Twyatt at twit.tv, and that hits all the hosts. We'd love to hear from you. We've had some great suggestions for guests, and I'm booking as fast as I can. And you know what? We're still trying to make sure that we even things out. We want some guests that are going to cater towards the smaller businesses, cater towards the people just getting started in the enterprise world, and we're going to have stuff all the way up in the rarefied territory of, you know, emerging technologies and everything in between. We try to even things up. So throw those suggestions at us. If you have a question, there's a very good chance someone else is going to have the same question, and we'd love to try and get a guest to answer them for you. Just keep quiet.
Thank you, Jerry. Well, we also have to thank Mr. Curtis Franklin as well. Curtis, what's going on for you in the coming weeks? Where can people find you?
Well, I'm working on an article for Dark Reading. I'm doing more on Twitter, and I am up to my armpits in research on various things. Would love to hear from folks out in the Twyatt audience on a couple of things. One, if you have had security training that you think is particularly good, or for that matter, particularly bad, I'd love to hear about it. Drop me a direct message on Twitter at KG4GWA, or hit me with a direct message over on the Twit Discord server. That's a good way to reach me as well. The other thing is your vulnerability management stuff. Are you automating that? Do you just like to find out what's going on? Do you have someone who sits there and spends every waking hour applying patches? Would love to know what your enterprise is doing for that and whether you think it's enough. Same places, Twitter, Discord, email, you name it, I'm there. And I always love to hear from folks in the land of Twiat.
Thank you, Curtis. Thank you guys for being here. Well, we also have to thank you as well. You are a person that drops in each and every week to watch and listen to our show to get your enterprise goodness. So we want to make it easy for you. So go to our show page right now, twit.tv/Twiat. There you'll get all the amazing back episodes that we have, the notes, the co-host information, the guest information. And more importantly, next to those videos, you'll get those helpful subscribe and download links. Support the show by getting your audio version, your video version of your choice, and listening on any one of your podcasts or applications. Subscribe. It's really the best way to support the show. But you may have heard we have a major announcement. Club Twit. What is it? Well, it's a member-only ad-free podcast service with a bonus Twit Plus feed. That's right. Plus, join the club for just $7 a month. And you'll even be given exclusive access to a members-only Discord channel. We have a bunch of great characters in there right now. We're in there right now. Join the club, Twit, and be part of this movement all along. Go to twit.tv/clubtwit. Now, after you subscribe, you can impress your friends, your family members, your coworkers with the gift of Twiat. Because I'll tell you one thing, we talk a lot about some fun topics here on Twiat, and I guarantee they'll find them fun and interesting as well. Now, if you're already subscribed and you're available during the day, 1:30 p.m. Pacific on Fridays, we do the show live. That's right. You can watch it live at live.twit.tv. There we do all the fun stuff. We show the pizza, how the pizza's made, all the behind the scenes, all the fun stuff we do here at Twit. Of course, if you're going to watch the show live, you can also join our IRC channel as well. IRC.twit.tv has some great characters in there as well. So definitely join the chat room. Now, if you can't watch the show live and you can't be part of the live chat room, that's okay. You can still join the twit.community website as well. There's some great content and there's some great discussions. The hosts are out there, and we also have a lot of discussions out there as well. Remember, you can always, always, always follow me. twitter.com/LouMM. There I post some really great things about enterprise software, some of the things that I'm going through as I move, trying to disconnect Comcast. What a pain. I definitely put some stuff out there. But of course, more importantly, I also post some of my work that I do at Microsoft and the latest and greatest ways to customize your Office experience to make it more productive for you. You can check that out at developers.microsoft.com/office. Definitely check that out and check out our new Office script as well. It's the best way to create some macros for your Excel documents and run them online, even sometimes unattended. Some cool stuff going on there. I also want to thank everyone who makes this show possible, especially to Leo and Lisa. They continue to support This Week in Enterprise Tech each and every week, and we really couldn't do the show without them. So thank you for all their support over the years. And I also want to thank all the engineers and staff at Twit. They continue to support us every week. And I do want to also thank Mr. Brian Chi one more time. He's not only our co-host, but he's also our tireless producer as well. He does all the bookings and the plannings for the show, and we really couldn't do the show without him. So thanks again, Chibert, for all your support. And before we sign out, we do have to thank our editor, Victor. He makes us look good, even though sometimes we fall over our words. So thanks again, Victor. And of course, we also have to thank our TD for today, Mr. Ant Pruitt. He's not only our TD, but he's also an amazing host for some amazing content and shows here on Twit. What's going on for you in the coming weeks, Ant?
Oh, man, I'm still a little bit fired up from this week's episode of Hands on Photography. Got to talk to Mr. Rick Salmon, and man, he's a legendary, a living legend photographer. So, excuse me while I go catch my breath.
great episode. Definitely check that out. And until next time, I'm Louis Maresca, just reminding you, if you want to know what's going on in the enterprise, just keep Twiat.
Hey, I hope you enjoyed that episode. If you are interested in checking out all things smart home and Internet of Things, then you should check out Smart Tech Today, the podcast I, Micah Sargent, do with my co-host Matthew Casanelli. It's all about the smart home and improving your automations.